Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is our first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or are just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of the Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes or Stitcher. Today I talked to Dr. Hugh Whiteley, an emeritus professor of the University of Guelph. Dr. Whiteley is a regular fixture at city council meetings, often delegating on matters concerning sane planning for a sensible tomorrow. Dr. Whiteley is a man that clearly believes in delegating early and delegating often, and as people are trying to learn the best ways to engage with City Hall, I thought it might be interesting to know more about how he does what he does and why. Talking to City Hall on their grounds is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, when I say Dr. Whiteley has been delegating to council for a long time, I don't just mean before Guelph Politico. He came to Guelph in the early days of the University of Guelph and taught hydrological engineering, which explains his frequent presence at council on water issues and other natural resources planning. But more than just showing up occasionally to grouse about whatever's on the agenda, Whiteley has actually been involved in crafting some key planning processes in the 1990s, so his expertise is not to be dismissed out of hand. More than that, or rather more than his expertise, Whiteley brings general interest and passion about local governance and the responsibility that local government has for creating the best possible city for citizens now and in the future to live in. And I think a lot of people have that passion, but are stymied as to how to get involved in a more official capacity, or rather than just registering their disgust or delight on the social media feeds. Now, I've dedicated some time both here on Politico and in my Guelph Today column in trying to demystify the City Hall processes, how one can get involved, how to file for a delegation, or even just find out what's going on in your neighborhood. And while Whiteley has expertise in terms of engineering and planning, the most vital one I think he can lend to you, the listener, is on how you yourself can get involved and get more informed on city matters. So on this week's podcast, I sit down with Dr. Whiteley about how he became an emeritus delegate at City Council, his background and interests, and if he ever wonders if the people around the horseshoe at City Hall ever get sick of seeing his face. This is a discussion I've been looking forward to having for a long, long time. Covering City Council, you get used to seeing Dr. Whiteley there and hearing his voice on any number of issues. He's a civic engagement hero, and this is his secret origins. So I caught up with Dr. Whiteley last week in studio. So Dr. Hugh Whiteley, thank you for joining me today.
I'm very glad to be back at CFRU after a very considerable absence, maybe more than a decade, I think.
Probably very a whole collection of different faces.
Yes, right.
Years ago. So just for people who may not be familiar with you, I'm going to ask yourself to just give us your background and your area of expertise and how you came to be Councillor Whiteley, as we were joking before recording.
Right. I came to Guelph in 1966 as a faculty member of the very recently opened University of Guelph, although the School of Engineering, where I joined, had been in existence within the Agricultural College since its founding. I became interested in a variety of city activities, partly because as an undergraduate, I had been interested in a city planning course that I took in civil engineering. And although my expertise is in water, particularly the hydrology of water flow and the behavior of water in surface and groundwater systems, I had this second interest in how cities are organized and planned. And that evolved over the long period of time, my residence here, and particularly came to the focus in the 1990s because I was engaged in a local group that wanted to see in the official plan a nuclear weapon-free clause, which was a novelty, but we actually made significant progress. We got it into a draft of the official plan, which was later removed, and then engaged with the Ontario Municipal Board as to whether it would be appropriate or not. And in the course of doing that, I became familiar with planning staff and subsequently got invited to be one of the panel members of a very extensive community engagement process leading up to the 2001 official plan.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, the city planning staff was very committed to significant public engagement, and that continued on through the 90s. And subsequent to that, I have made interventions when I thought that the city wasn't as receptive to citizen engagement as it had been in the 90s, with great success, I thought.
I want to get back to that, but the nuclear thing, was there a chance that Guelph was going to get the bomb in the 90s? What was behind that?
There was a widespread across Canada citizens movement which was related to the rejection of nuclear weapons by Canada.
Right.
And as a follow-up to that, citizens felt that to make that position emphatic, Canada should dissociate itself with any preparations for nuclear weapons.
Okay.
So the idea of a nuclear weapon-free Guelph was to list preparation of material for nuclear weapons as a prohibited industrial activity.
Gotcha.
There was never any prospect that that would be done in Guelph.
Right.
But
there's no uranium mines
still
in the area.
No, it was still a way of emphasizing an opinion.
It was a statement of intent.
That's correct.
Yeah. So you said that you want to come forward whenever you think that council is not listening to the people, but I think just from observing you coming into council, I think part of what you do is also maybe have a more of a senatorial role where you're kind of sober second thought, where it seems like you feel that, considering your years in considering planning and regulations and things, that council may be not observing the rules as well as they should on a given matter.
I think in general, my interventions are in support of either what is the established planning process, which on occasion gets neglected by city staff, or to point to departures from what has been a successful pathway for the city. For example, the city was a leader across Canada in establishing open space planning as the core part of laying out the growth areas of the city.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1970s, the city adopted the position that the first thing you had to do was establish what open spaces were going to be kept.
Right.
Once you had done that, you laid out the rest of the properties to be developed around the open space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm chagrined to see that the city has been without an open space plan since 2009.
Okay.
From 1970 through to 2009, it was the core.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not even done. So that's the kind of intervention where I try to draw attention to what I think are unfortunate departures from good practice.
Right. Correct me if I'm wrong, that was the last time the official plan was reviewed, was 09, was it not?
No, the master plan process goes on in advance of official plan changes.
Right.
There's been a considerable number of reports which point out that if you don't do master plans and you try to patch together a whole set of decisions without a master plan, you're almost certain to find grave difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there is an organization of the finance officers of municipalities of Ontario.
Okay.
And about 10 years ago, they issued a special communique in which they said, and they emphasized particularly in transportation planning,
okay,
that any expenditures made could only be logically justified if there was a master plan for the transportation system done first.
Okay.
And the city has a rather very long in the tooth transportation master plan, it at least hasn't been abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
The change that occurred in 2009 is that that was the renewal period for the previous 1997 open space master plan.
Right.
It was a bit overdue. It should have been done in 2007, but 2009, not bad as a renewal.
Not bad for government.
No. The city commissioned an update master plan. It was prepared, brought to committee of city council, which is the normal step before it goes to city council for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than passing it on immediately to city council for adoption, the committee said that it needed an implementation plan, which it didn't have, and told staff to prepare the implementation plan as well and bring the whole thing back to city council by December of 2009.
Right. A little quick.
And that's when things stopped.
Okay.
It has never been brought back to city council for adoption.
Huh. So they wanted to accelerate the process, it sounds like, by doing the implementation along with the update, and then it ceases.
Well, actually, the committee was quite correct. A master plan without an implementation section is incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really just saying, you've got the master plan structure well along, but you've forgotten to do one of the key ingredients. So finish it off, okay. Bring it to council for adoption.
Do you ever like talk to people like staff at City Hall? Like, hey, guys, you remember this? This was supposed to be something worked on. I mean, because we're talking 2009, which is actually almost 10 years ago.
Yes, correct. I have been in frequent communication with both staff members and council members.
And what do they say? It's like
well, one of the disturbing things is that staff told me that I had said that the plan had been not rejected, but abandoned. I said the plan had been abandoned, which, after 8 years of inaction, I think is not a bad. And their comment, which disturbed me, was it hasn't been abandoned. We're following it. But the difficulty is that it is not the role of staff to develop plans and then follow them.
Right.
It is the role of staff to develop a master plan, present it to city council, and ask the question, is this the master plan you want us to follow?
Mm-hmm.
And city council has the authority to say, yes, we adopt it. Now go ahead and do it.
Right.
Or they have the option of saying, this isn't the right master plan. Do another one that we can adopt.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, neither of those happened. Staff stopped advancing it towards city council adoption and just said, well, we'll follow it anyway. We think it's a pretty good plan, so we'll follow it without city council authority.
Right. What do you think of that? Because it seems to me, I guess, having a plan, if it's not officially voted on, is better than having no plan at all. But just in terms of like general oversight, and in terms of perhaps there's a staff, a civil service that's maybe doing things that council's unaware of, and then council gets caught unknowing about something that's going on. And what I mean, maybe it's been working fine the last 8 or 9 years, but what happens when we run into issues?
Well, I have two reactions to that. A, I don't think it's been working well. I think they've been, in the absence of an open space plan, been making decisions which the open space plan should have been prominently mentioned and used as the guide for. But because it's not adopted, staff can't directly talk about it.
Mm.
And so I'm not sure that they really are using it.
Mm.
But the more important question is, why do we have an elected city council if staff are going to do whatever they want to do?
Mm-hmm.
That's just not the way civic government is structured.
Sure.
Civic government is structured in which city council is elected to make policy decisions. It's staff role to carry those policy decisions out.
Right. Well, this gets into another question I want to ask you, because You come in, you make your delegations, your interventions, as you call them. You make these points, and you do frequently reference the fact that there's a master plan that is in some sort of quasi-stasis, yep. or it exists, but it doesn't exist. It's Schrodinger's master plan. But you come in, you make your presentation. How do you follow up after that? Do maybe even counselors reach out to you because you only get that 5-minute time span, and it is kind of limiting, and you know there's sometimes questions that don't occur to you in the moment.
There is some reaction, but not a great deal. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes pressures mm-hmm. that aren't part of my perceptions about what is the situation.
Right.
And so that form of intervention isn't particularly effective.
Mm-hmm.
And what I hope it encourages, but it hasn't so far, is the adoption of a more activist position by city councilors.
Okay.
In comparison with some other municipalities, in general, municipal councilors in Guelph are much more followers of staff guidance mm-hmm. than directors of staff policy.
Right.
I haven't immediately thought of much in the way of council-generated policy directions where mm-hmm. council members have come to an agreement that Guelph should be doing this sort of policy development and have on their own sort of directed staff to begin that kind of process.
Right.
It's much more that staff every year bring forward what staff thinks the city's policies and direction should be mm-hmm. and council amends them, but doesn't have an initiation role significantly.
Right.
They are arbiters of what staff bring forward rather than innovators of policy.
The devil's advocate point of view to that is that, and you hear this in councils, that staff are paid to mm-hmm. to tackle these issues, to sort of surround their individual expertise areas, and that the council, being not full-time, being, you know, having to be more generalist and have a more overview role, because they have to, you know, look after several different areas across the whole city.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you're sort of doing the reverse of that, you're maybe not using your staff to the fullest, or maybe not allowing them to do the work they should need/to be doing.
Right. Well, an important issue is micromanagement.
Right.
Because I'm not thinking about individual situation responses.
Right.
And the main significant complaint of staff with good reason is that it's not the role of city council to get into the direct details of management and begin to shift where things happen.
Right.
There are amusing occasions where that kind of intervention did occur.
Sure.
One long ago case was the widening of Gordon Street was a major public subject of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
The transportation department in Guelph wanted a 4-lane road from the university down to Wellington Street.
Right.
And that would have involved very big changes to the appearance of Gordon Street and the Gordon Street Hill.
Yeah.
And I think correctly, the local residents and a wider community mounted a very significant public campaign to retain Gordon as a 2-lane road
mm-hmm.
and eventually succeeded, convinced city council that the sort of technical requirements of a 4-lane road weren't the governing criteria. It was the main theme street in Guelph, and retaining its appearance was very important and has been.
Right.
But that led to a question of how to do the Gordon College intersection if a 2-lane road was going to be retained.
Mm-hmm.
And at City Council, where this big question was being debated, the city engineer suggested that it would make it very difficult to do a proper intersection at College, particularly for southbound traffic.
Right.
And Councillor Pate, who was on council at the time, said, no, no, no. And he got out an envelope and sketched in the current right turn lane in front of the corner.
Wow.
And said, we're going to do it this way. And that's how it was done. What? So there are occasions where micromanagement does apply.
What year was this, or when about was this?
Would be in the late 80s, early 90s, I think.
Wow. Yeah, you don't see too much of that at council these days.
No.
Let me ask you this. Do you ever feel, because you are such a familiar face at council, that when you get up to speak, when you are, and the mayor invites you to come down and make your delegation, do you ever get a sense that you're looking at 13 people who are like, here comes Dr. Whiteley, what's he going to be complaining about this time? I don't know.
I used to have a very good idea. It depends on whether my intervention is going to be in support of the majority of council's already existing opinion or not. That's what governs the attitude. But I used to have a very good idea when Joe Young was mayor.
Oh, yeah.
Because I, after a fairly short time, realized that he had two ways of introducing me.
Mm-hmm.
And he would make a prejudgment as to what kind of intervention I was going to make. If he thought it was going to be really useful and support his position, he would introduce me as Dr. Whiteley.
Mm-hmm.
And if he thought I was going to be obstructionist and raise difficulties, he would introduce me as Mr. Whiteley.
Oh.
And so I knew as I got to the podium, I have a receptive audience
have a challenge. Yeah. That's funny, because I did note in preparing for this interview, I found an old blog post by then Councillor Guthrie, now Mayor Guthrie, where it was about the skate park how you were delegating. And he's like, he wrote, I can't remember the exact phrase, but he wrote like, well, Dr. Whiteley came up and he delegates a lot, which is great, but this is...
Yeah.
That's sort of, you know...
Sure, yeah.
Galvanize sort of what I do wonder every time you take the podium, how many people you're looking at, and you're thinking to yourself, you know, because you probably are in a more wonkish
yes.
knowledge base on a lot of these things because you've been doing it for so long, especially
yeah.
when you're talking to people who've been on council for not even one term so far, like Councillor Ault, Councillor Gordon, Councillor mm-hmm. McKinnon, Councillor Gibson. It must feel like, you know, you're kind of batting at the same, swinging at the same pitch again and again
yep.
because it comes in with different councils.
One of the difficulties I have, and this is, I recognize it's an easy position for councillors to get into because listening to the interventions by individuals, it is in some objective kind of way. Is not easy
mm-hmm.
because it's in the public forum and the audience is judging in part how the councillors respond
right.
In their body language and attitudes as much as they are judging whether or not they're on topic.
Right.
And what this leads to is, and some councillors fall into this more than others, a drift away from the topic
right.
to the presenter.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and
I've noticed that.
I have a great deal of difficulty when their attitude seems to be, I'm interested in you as a presenter,
mm-hmm.
not in what you are presenting as
right.
a contribution to the discussion.
Yeah.
And I've privately asked several counselors if they could ease up on the personality response and concentrate more on what the subject was.
Well, you're right, because motivations are rarely unselfish.
Yeah.
And especially if you're talking about something like a 14-story apartment building going
yeah.
up on the next block over, your motivation is you don't want to be living in shadow for
yeah. sure.
all winter
yeah.
long,
yeah.
for example. Did you ever consider running for office yourself?
I did run for office during the nuclear weapon-free Guelph.
That was before my time.
Yes. It was the second last election before the move to a ward-based election system.
All right.
And it was solely to raise the issue of nuclear weapons-free Guelph. I didn't have any prospect of being elected. But the election campaign gave me an opportunity to raise this as an issue that city council should be in support of.
Did that give you any insight, the shoe being on the other foot, having to answer questions and not just pose them?
Well, it very much consolidated my support for a ward-based system because in that election there were, I think, about 26 candidates for the, I think it was at the time, 10 council positions.
Oh, wow.
And I think all of the elected councilors were running for re-election. So
it's kind of unusual.
There was, in fact, it was an almost entirely pointless election because with that number of votes to cast, the predominant choice voters made was whose name do I recognize on this list? And consequently, the already elected councilors were almost automatically returned.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always next year.
Yeah, right.
Given your experience, and this is, I'll come at this in a couple different ways. The first way is, you've delegated for years different counselors. The faces have all changed, and in your time talking to City Hall, if you were on the end of trying to orientate counselors and trying to maybe, if you had a day, as kind of an emeritus sort of delegate representative, let's say, and you could sort of give incoming counselors an idea of what that you think they should keep their eye on in terms of preparing and making these decisions, mm-hmm. what kind of things would you tell them?
I think there's one very dominant theme I would make. There is an attachment in theory of all counselors to public participation. Mm-hmm. But what is lacking is any probing of what the substance of that public participation is.
Right.
So when I raise that as a lack in some decision-making process, counselors are satisfied if there is somewhere in the staff report a statement that there was public participation in this. And they simply accept that, public participation, it's in the report, it's looked after.
Right.
And I think for good decisions, what counselors need to have in front of them is what is the substance of that the staff report is relying on. And I'll give you an example of what a good response would be.
Okay.
When the 1997 Open Space Master Plan was brought to City Council, there was in the staff reporting 3 pages of description of the process in which the public was engaged and a list of about 20 people that were given special thanks for the degree of contribution that they'd made.
Okay.
And among the motions at the adoption was one that the mayor would write to each of the people on the list expressing council's appreciation of their contribution to it.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's substantial public participation.
Okay.
And just the note in the staff report that there was a consultation mm-hmm. isn't that kind of in-depth recounting of how this decision was reviewed before it got to council.
Because they might have had a meeting at 3 o'clock on Wednesday and 2 people showed up.
Yeah. Well, a good example is OPA 48, which was the third stage of the revision of the official plan,
mm-hmm.
which had been presented 18 months earlier as being simply a tidying up no substantial issues left to be dealt with. We're just going to go through and tidy up the official plan, dealing with a few issues like should there or shouldn't there be drive-through restaurants.
Okay.
That was one of three questions that were left to be resolved.
Okay.
As it turned out, staff spent 18 months rewriting the entire official plan.
Right.
And then in February, 18 months later, had two public meetings in which they said, that's the public engagement that was involved in this complete rewriting of the official plan.
Okay.
And then went on to city council. And one of the major changes related to the River Systems Advisory Committee.
Right.
And the River Systems Management Plan was taken out of the official plan.
Okay.
The River Systems Advisory Committee, which is appointed by city council
yeah.
to look for guidance from the River Systems Management Master Plan for all city projects in the river corridor,
right.
were not consulted in this dropping of the master plan from OPA 48.
Oops.
And when they appealed to city council saying, delay decision, yeah. give us a chance to comment on this, city council said, well, you've had since February. They didn't know that this dropping had occurred.
Yeah.
But council's attitude was, you've had since February. This is now June.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't make this until the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
We're going ahead with approving it.
When was this?
That was in 2012.
Okay. So that's fairly recent. But, I mean, that leads into another area I wanted to explore, because I think we see in council meetings things come up, and if people are aware of them, it almost seems like they're aware of them last minute.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems like a good example, even though the Rivers Advisory Committee is in part of the system, presumably
yep.
part of
yep.
the system.
Correct.
But just for like regular old people, not old as in aged, but, you know, regular old folks mm-hmm. out there who just wanted to stay informed, you know, in terms of what's going on in their own backyard. I think there's a difficulty, you know, there's the community pages in the Tribune,
yep.
but at the same time, there's the website, there's Facebook and other social media. It seems like we have the ability to have the most well-informed populace possible.
Yep.
But we keep falling down.
It's very, very uneven.
Yeah.
Since I've been somewhat negative in responses so far, let me say that the planning process for Claire Maltby
okay.
is a really excellent example of staff going out and soliciting and developing a structure in which community opinion can be fed into the process.
Okay.
They've done a really good job on it, and even took an initiative that I'm really proud of Guelph doing. They went to the Mississaugas of the New Credit
mm-hmm.
and brought a representative from that First Nation to Guelph
mm-hmm.
and had a significant length discussion about what First Nations interventions were going to be of interest to them, and arranged for contact points through the rest of the process so mm. that the First Nations are engaged in the process in a very direct way.
Okay.
If that attitude could be transmitted across all of staff to say, this is the way you engage the public, and while it takes more effort in the early stages of development of a proposal,
mm-hmm.
it surely pays off at the end, because when you come to city council, you can say, look, this is a well-developed plan with lots of community engagement.
Right.
There is solid support in the community for this way of advancing the city's policies.
I wonder if that's a matter of scale, though, because Claire Maltby, we're talking about a big, huge, empty, mm-hmm. mostly empty tract of land that one can project any number of potentials on versus
right.
something like a half acre where people want to
sure.
build townhouses.
But although that's a higher level of engagement than is needed in every case, in general, the planning process notification system is much better than any decisions that are made outside of the planning structure.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows up in city council and in the minutes. for the planning part of city council minutes now, there will still be a summary of each presentation because that's part of the public record for the Planning Act purposes.
Right.
And there's ample notification, and you have the opportunity to sign up to be informed of later stages of the process. And the city's very good about following up on that once you've expressed an interest.
Right.
In contrast, the city clerk has now adopted the attitude that only skeletal city council minutes are permitted under the Municipal Act. I have strong disagreement with the clerk on this interpretation. But the result is that whereas in the past, council minutes were quite informative about what major issues delegations brought to council.
Mm-hmm.
Now the minutes simply record the name, number of the presenter. That's
right.
It. Someone spoke on this issue.
I wonder if that's because they also post the audio, the full audio.
But it is only the minutes that are required under the Municipal Act and are the public record.
Right.
Yes, you can go to the audio and find out what was actually said. And a secondary concern, a directly related concern I have is that council has this habit and has had for decades of having staff agreeing to do things just verbally.
Right.
We are going to get a report on this at the next time this issue comes up, aren't we? And staff will nod and say yes. And that doesn't get in the minutes.
Right.
And so there have been occasions where that promise has been made and not fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was in the minutes, you are in a much better position to report that and say, look, this report was requested. It was agreed that it would be prepared. Where is it?
Yes, because the minutes are part of the package. So presumably they would be read by councilors.
It doesn't require a large amount of material. It's just
it's a line.
The director of public works said that they would present a report on.
Let me put this back on the people for a minute.
Sure.
For Joe and Jane Guelphite, I've been trying to rattle my own brain about how we approach this, but for people who do want to stay on top of it, and in appreciation that people are busy and they have lives and kids and extracurriculars and jobs and things, what's your best advice to people who want to stay informed on City Hall and maybe aren't wanting to go the full Dr. Hugh Whiteley route with years of science and engagement and planning and all that, but just to stay generally informed?
Probably the most direct route is to have a conversation with both of your ward counselors and give them an indication of topics, not too many, but two or three topics on which you have some concerns about what direction the city may be going, and ask them to put you in touch with a staff member, and you could then register that if something is being done in relation to it, I would very much like to have some information presented to me about that so I can make a comment if I think I have anything to say about it.
Interesting.
But go through the counselor with a list, a short list of topics where you have an interest, and see if you can establish a contact that would result in information coming to you when a decision is pending.
How about you? Where are your interests these days?
Principally in preservation of green space. I discovered that the city of Ottawa has a really excellent green space master plan. And it's excellent because they, at the beginning of it, say green spaces is a very expansive category. It includes the natural heritage areas that are required to be protected by provincial policy direction. But it includes the trees along streets, the bit of green space that is left as undeveloped land can't be otherwise used. And it's deeply treasured by a large part of the population. That's mm-hmm. how the Ottawa Green Space Plan starts. And so we're going to look in a very wide definitional way at all of the green spaces in Ottawa and try to work out a pattern of protection and enhancement that will give people that experience of the unbuilt landscape to enrich their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very similar to the philosophy in the 1970s in Guelph, where the city administrator said that acquiring large block of land in the Hanlon Creek watershed would be beyond price in the future because of the increased need for people to keep contact with natural settings mm-hmm. as cities grew. And as very perceptibly, as the population aged.
Yeah.
That was Fred Woods in 1970, correctly, I think, projecting what the real needs are in the 2020s.
Yeah, he saw the day that Guelph would be that far south.
Yeah, right, yep.
Well, Dr. Whiteley, I so much appreciate your time and coming in to talk to me. There's probably so much more we can touch on, but we'll leave it there for today. And like they say in showbiz, leave them wanting more. So
thank you.
Thank you for joining me. And once again, that was Dr. Hugh Whiteley. If you want to hear more from Dr. Whiteley, you will have to wait until September because Council's on hiatus until then. On next week's podcast, I will recap the year at Council so far, so stay tuned for that. Anyway, that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And of course, you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, please consider donating, and any and all donations are appreciated. Thank you very much. For all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.